Welcome to the White Spring Bunker. These halls were built to safeguard some of the most prestigious members of the United States government. We are MODIS, and we are always looking for men and women capable of helping us restore what has been lost. In return, we offer this, a new enclave and our refuge from the world above. Please, take your time and look around. The Colonel has made great strides restoring this place to its former glory. Welcome, member, to our little enclave.
Greetings, members. As always, I am the Operative, your designated tour guide and host here at the White Spring. Major Lilith is finally in her element. No rules, no limits, and only one goal: kill all the Blood Eagles she can find. From the ash heap to the mire, she and her team have left a trail of destruction in their wake, and Berkeley Springs is her next target. However, there are others who will take advantage of the chaos. The Blood Eagle War is far from over.
Frank, keep it together, man. There's nothing out there. There ain't nothing good out here. Nothing. Nowhere. It's all shit.
The Blood Eagle camp on the outskirts of Berkeley Springs sat on the top of a cluster of old spas from the town's pre-war past. Sentries manned the upper walkways while taking potshots at the few remaining scorched who occupied the old town center, while the other gang members were either catching up on their sleep or drinking themselves silly.
What was that? Probably a squirrel again.
Hey, you done yet?
Bitter whispered back to Sullivan, who was busy placing a satchel charge against the side of one of the old spa buildings.
Well, if you want to explode, then yeah, I'm done. If you actually want to walk out of here, no, I'm not fucking done. Just give me another minute of silence.
Bitter rolled his eyes. Sullivan had been in a foul mood for the past few days. The hike up from the ash heap had been difficult. They'd stumbled on a nest of Mirelurk kings on the second day, and Sullivan had gotten a good dose of poison. Freya wasn't just going to leave him, so she made Malgus carry him until they could set up camp. He didn't know who was more foul, Sullivan retching his guts out for 2 days or Malgus trying to clean off his power armor. Lucky for them, they'd found a medical stash in the southern mire near the old Camp Venture, which had had antitoxin and gotten Sullivan back on his feet, if not in a better mood. Following the old roads north, they had tried to track down Beckett's friend Sage, but by the time they reached the Mothman cultist compound, they found it deserted. Freya had been angry, really angry. She wandered off for an entire day with Malgus, not telling either of them where they'd gone to or when to expect them back. For Bitter, he'd learned it didn't pay to ask those types of questions of the boss. He never liked the answers. So he and Sullivan had spent the day playing cards. Even that wasn't nearly as fun, with Sullivan still feeling pretty awful, because Bitter was able to win every hand, even without his trademark cheating. The boss had returned a day later, apparently in a much better mood, with a full pack of whatever she called food. Even Malga seemed a lot more relaxed and less his usual surly self. It wasn't until later, when they ran into some traders when they heard the stories about a group of Blood Eagles who were set upon by what they called monsters. The traders found one of them, barely alive and missing all of his fingers, who gave them a barely coherent story of what had happened. Bitter knew exactly who was responsible when he saw the amused expression on the boss's face, but recreational activities were hard to stomach, even for a wasteland veteran like himself. Since finding Malgus, the boss had gotten even more bloodthirsty, and the two of them were thick as thieves, feeding off one another in their crusade against the Blood Eagles. He kept telling himself that once this job was over, he'd take his caps and get the hell out of Appalachia. The boss's work with the Blood Eagles must have paid off, since they'd gotten back on the road north, past Harper's Ferry, and ended up on the outskirts of a town called Berkeley Springs. She told him that they'd gotten a line on one of the Blood Eagle leaders, a woman they called the Blood, at a place called Bloody Franks. Bitter and Sullivan had infiltrated the town to get a lay of the land. The southern part was still infested with Scorched, but they were easy to avoid, as long as they stuck to the side alleys into the shadows. Beyond that, the Blood Eagles had built their camp on top of a series of buildings near the northern edge of the town. They put out a mess of turrets and seemed to pass the time taking potshots at any of the local Scorched who wandered too close to their home. They figured the best way was to blow a hole in the side of one of the spas. From there, they should be able to access the rooftops and clear out the space. Sullivan was able to get close enough to peek through the windows and catch sight of the staircase going up. Following that from the outside, it appeared to lead to the third floor ramp to the main area of the camp. The two of them slip back to their camp, just south of the town, and the whole team prep for their assault that evening. Once they breached the perimeter, Bittard and Sullivan would clear the ground level and the second floor, then cover the boss and Malgus as they took the third floor and the main camp area. The boss made it clear that they weren't interested in prisoners or interrogations this time around. It was about sending a message to the Blood Eagle leadership. Sullivan put the finishing touches on his handiwork, gave a quick thumbs up, and he and Bittard ducked behind a nearby stone wall. He'd set the timer for 20 seconds, and Bittard could see him counting down under his breath. The breaching charge made a whooping sound, and the wall collapsed inward, leaving a nice man-sized hole. For close combat, Sullivan had brought along his pump-action shotgun, while Bitter had borrowed one of his automatic pistols in place of his normal lever action. Before the dust had settled, they leapt over the low wall and were inside the building within seconds. Bitter swung left while Sullivan went right. A Blood Eagle stumbled down the stairs holding a rifle, only to be blown backwards by a shotgun blast. From somewhere above, they could hear the sound of a siren going off, and the heavy footfalls of running. So they had to move fast to clear the building. Sullivan posted on the stairwell, waiting until he saw legs coming down the stairs, then fired twice, knocking down three Blood Eagles who rolled down the landing. Without missing a beat, he fired into the tangle of bodies before advancing up the stairs. Bitter cleared the downstairs before covering Sullivan as they both made it to the second floor. They found several floor traps and even a turret guarding the way to the roof, but those were taken care of with some shotgun blasts. Sullivan ducked behind a set of bunks as the bullets splattered the walls around them.
Guess we woke them all up.
Yeah, you think?
Bitter peeked around the corner and pulled out a frag grenade from his pocket, pulling the pin and throwing it down the hallway. The explosion rocked the building, putting another couple of Blood Eagles out of commission. Sullivan broke out a side window and started laying cover fire across to the other buildings, trying to keep the Eagles' heads down. As the volume of incoming fire increased, both teammates hoped that everything else was going according to plan. Below, Malgus smashed a larger hole in the outer wall, charging directly towards the stairs in his power armor. Freya followed closely behind with her LMG, covering the rear. Blood Eagles were beginning to regain their balance, with the leaders having rousted everyone they could muster and were ready to charge the occupied building in force. Both Billard and Sullivan could see the massive Eagles and were starting to get worried. That wasn't until Malgus nearly bowled them over and roared as he brought his plasma Gatling gun to bear. He fired from the hip, pouring plasma bolts up to the rooftops. Those Eagles who weren't gooified threw themselves down to the rooftop and ducked behind cover. Freya leapt up to the landing and let loose with her LMG. The ripping sound was matched by the impact of the 308 round shredding the corrugated metal shacks erected by the Blood Eagles. Bitter was just about to yell at them to be careful since they didn't know how many Eagles were left, but both Malgus and Freya charged across the makeshift bridge to the other rooftop, screaming and firing the whole way.
Holy shit! What the hell are we supposed to do now?
Cover them, I guess.
Bitter brought out his lever action and trained it across the courtyard, while Sullivan blasted at anything that moved with his shotgun. The fire reached a crescendo as they caught glimpse of the big man and their boss making their way across the rooftops. Freya was having the time of her life. The Blood Eagles were falling around her, either torn apart by her LMG or turned into goo piles by Magnus's Gatling plasma. Their advance was like a tide, and the Eagle had as much chance of standing against it as a sandcastle would have. As they cleared the last three rooftops, they finally found their target. They called her the Blood. In truth, what they found was just a young woman, now scared out of her mind, confronted by the giant Malgus. She'd been hiding behind a broken dresser holding a dirty knife. Malgus had reached in and grabbed her by the arm, dragging her out into what had been the kitchen. He held her up, nearly pulling her arm from its socket, examining her closely. Freya came up from behind, skipping across the floor and laughing.
My, oh my. Look what we caught.
Freya smiled and grabbed the Blood by the chin.
Please, please, please don't kill me.
It was Malgus's turn to laugh, though it came out more as a cough with the burns on his face and vocal cords. To any sane person, it would have sounded terrifying. To Freya, it was merely sweet music.
I'd say don't worry, sweetheart, but that'd be a lie. What's that old saying? This is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. Yeah. Just turn that one around. Gotta send a message. And I'm so awfully hungry.
The scream seemed to go on forever, but Bitter and Sullivan had almost become numb to their boss's proclivities. Bitter just lit himself a cigarette and tried to think of something else. Anything else. While Sullivan did a sweep to check the bodies and make sure that there were no survivors. He made his way back through the building below when he found a live raider. Sullivan had almost blasted him with his shotgun when he noticed the insignia on the jacket he was wearing. It wasn't a blood eagle.
Tell the boss she's gonna want to see this.
Holy shit!
Bitter walked across to the opposite rooftop. The screams had stopped, so it might have been okay to interrupt. The smell of blood was overpowering as he approached, so he stayed well back and knocked against the corrugated metal.
Who is it?
Boss? Well, Sullivan's got something you should see.
Be out in a minute.
Bitter swore he heard the crunching of bones, and he winced. A few minutes later, Freya walked out, covered in blood and gore, whistling an old show tune.
Lead the way.
Bitter suppressed his gag reflex and walked over and down to where Sullivan was holding a shotgun on a wounded raider. Freya was about to ask him why the raider was still alive until she caught sight of his face. She'd seen him before. The raider looked up, and it took several seconds for him to recognize her face, which is when his eyes went wide in terror.
Funny seeing you here.
Freya laughed as the raider peed himself.
Once upon a time, 27 years after the bombs fell, there were two people, a vault dweller and a California girl. They met and sparks flew. That's when things got interesting. Once Upon a Wasteland is their story. Follow Elizabeth Kirby and Odessa Valdez as they pursue their happily ever after in the post-apocalyptic Appalachian wasteland of Fallout 76. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and many other podcasting platforms. Once Upon a Wasteland, a Fallout 76 love story. Available now.
Rose, gotta get that stupid liberator out of the bunkhouses. They nearly tore Mikey's face off.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah. Blah, blah, blah.
Please, Rose. I'll see what I can do about those chems.
Chems? Fine. Jeez, you fakers can't take a joke, can you?
Joshua, the raider boss, just threw up his hands and stormed back to the elevator.
Damn bot.
If Rose hadn't been the only one capable of running the advanced telecommunications equipment and providing useful information on post-war raider caches, Joshua would have consigned her to the scrap heap a long time ago. But as long as she didn't kill anyone, well, at least anyone important, Joshua was willing to tolerate her. As he left the elevator, the raider boss, former Vault 76er, looked over the old resort, thought back over the past year and a half since Reclamation Day. Top of the World Gang. That's what Joshua called his crew. He and a few of the others had set up shop at the old ski resort after leaving Vault 76 and finding Appalachia not to be the welcoming place the Overseer promised. The old gangs of Appalachia had left plenty behind when the Scorch wiped them out. But it had been rough those first few months, with multiple small gangs establishing themselves in the old Raider Gang territories, fighting to see who'd come out on top. They had been doing okay, raiding some of the small Vault 76 resident settlements and merchants. But then Mad Cat's gang had made a play for the resort, and it looked like the Top of the World gang would be wiped out. Then, by what must have been a stroke of divine luck, he'd gotten a visit that pulled their asses out of the fire. He hadn't taken the girl seriously when she first showed up claiming to be part of something called the New Enclave. But it didn't take long for him to get it, especially after she blew Joey's brains all over what passed for his office. She made him an offer he couldn't refuse, and hell, it had worked out pretty well. Not only did his gang get the weapons they needed, but getting rid of Mad Cat had allowed him to get most of the other gangs to either join him, or at least agree to play nice. And all it took in return was some hospitality and information being passed along. Well, that, and also policing their own. There have been some troublemakers in the beginning, and even a few who challenged his leadership. He'd been able to deal with most of them himself, but one or two required a bit of outside assistance. After their bodies had been found, and in the condition they were in, the questions of leadership suddenly stopped. Things changed a bit when Meg and her diehards came back. It even surprised the hell out of him, since he and everyone else thought the Scorched had killed or turned all of them way back in the day. There have been enough left around Top of the World, plus the crazy-ass robot Rose, to learn about all the different gangs, but seeing them back in the flesh was something else. His friends down at the resort had encouraged him to reach out to Meg and work out an arrangement. It hadn't been as hard as he thought. Rose even pointed into a couple of things that Meg would want, including some stupid trophy, which immediately put them in Meg's good graces. Since then, there was plenty of trade between Crater and Top of the World, and it made his partners very happy.
Who would have thought my PhD in economics would be put to good use after the apocalypse? Hell, the world works in mysterious ways.
Looking down from the balcony of the ski chalet that Joshua had made his own, he could see a caravan nearing the checkpoint they had set up just south of the old Pleasant Valley train station. Per his arrangement, the Crater caravans got through free of charge. Everyone else had to pay a tax, whether in caps or a percentage of goods. A few of his guys had tried to take the tax out in services, but he put a stop to that right quick. The settlers at Foundation had been quite the pain. They tried to negotiate with him soon after they first arrived, but his benefactors made it clear that he wasn't supposed to cut them any breaks. There had been some pretty harsh words, especially from one of their bigwigs by the name of Ward, but in the end, they paid, although most of their caravans steered clear atop of the world. But it was the Blood Eagles who really given them trouble. At first, he figured they were just another raider gang. A group of them had come by. At first, it looked to be just a getting-to-know-you visit, until they all pulled guns and it turned into a firefight. Joshua lost a few good men that day, but they'd wiped out the Eagles. After that, they shot them on sight, and there have been a lot more of them than they expected. The Blood Eagles were bad for business. Every trader lost, every caravan looted, was less caps in their pocket. And that got the boys all nervous-like. Last headcount? They lost three guys who jumped ship and were last seen headed towards the closest Blood Eagle camp. So as much as he hated it, he'd been looking to cut some kind of side deal. He knew his friends wouldn't be happy, but what they didn't know couldn't hurt him. Taylor, one of the old chemistry teachers from Vault 76 and now his resident chem maker, had come up with a plan to reach an accommodation with the Blood Eagles, something that might just end up reaping a tidy profit, too. He was beginning to regret sending him, but the die was cast. Taylor had gone up north to meet with someone called the Blood to negotiate a chem manufacturing deal. That had been more than a week ago, and they hadn't heard anything from Taylor since. The Blood Eagles on the warpath over what happened down in the ash heap. He figured a little extra insurance wasn't a bad thing, but only if Taylor came through.
Maybe it pays off, maybe it doesn't. Better hedge our bets, though. Put in a call to the resort.
Joshua cracked his knuckles over the railing and went back inside, grabbing a bottle of whiskey on his way down. He wanted a few drinks in him before he had to do any real work. He walked down the rickety stairs, using his mouth to pull the cork from the top of the bottle. He turned the corner to his makeshift office, bottle poised above his mouth, when he saw someone behind his desk. He stopped mid-stride, and when he saw exactly who it was, the bottle dropped from his hand and shattered on the floor.
What? Not happy to see me?
The figure behind the desk smiled, just like a cat getting ready to eat the canary. Joshua was rooted to the spot. He didn't dare move his hands, lest his visitor think he was reaching for a weapon. The figure chuckled, then leaned forward into the light, revealing Freya, better known as Lilith, or as some called her, the Demoness of Appalachia.
Oh, come on. You look like you've seen a ghost. Grab a chair.
Joshua lowered his arms, slowly, then took measured steps into the room before sitting in the proffered chair. He could feel the racing of his heart, and wondered if this was the last few minutes of his life. Lilith couldn't help but giggle, as it was obvious he was absolutely terrified of her. Rightly so, but it always amused her.
Sorry to have barged in on you unannounced, but I thought we should talk. See, I found this friend of yours someplace he shouldn't have been. And well, I wanted to clear up any confusion before I had to go and tell Val.
Joshua swallowed, looking around the room, anywhere but directly in her eyes.
I don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Don't play dumb. That'll only make me mad. If it helps, I already know about your little side deal with the Blood Eagles.
Lilith reached down to the pack next to her and pulled something out. When she dropped it on the desk in front of her, Joshua saw that it was Taylor's decapitated head, covered in blood and gore. He nearly fell out of his chair, rising and backing up until he pressed himself back against the wall. Lilith just smiled again as she stroked Taylor's matted hair.
I tell ya, I was really surprised to see him in Berkeley Springs with Blood Eagles. I mean, I could have sworn we had an arrangement, and last I heard, that didn't include deals with eagles. Now sit, talk, and maybe you'll still walk out of here and Val doesn't need to know about this.
Joshua managed to right the chair and sit back down again as he tried to stop his body from shaking.
That's better.
Lilith spun Taylor's head around the top of the desk, leaving a bloody mess as it wobbled.
So here's your chance to tell me everything, and maybe, just maybe, I don't skin you alive.
Well, see, the Blood Eagles, they use chems to keep their people in line. A lot of them. And we got wind that they hit a snag in their manufacturing process.
A snag, huh? And you decided to unsnag them?
They've been hitting our traders. It's been costing us. The guys are getting nervous. Just figured we could come to some kind of arrangement, that's all. Taylor said he knew some people, and yeah, I made the call.
So despite us giving you plenty of weapons and helping take out your rivals, you decided to double-cross us? Is that it?
No, I mean, we have a deal. This was just another deal. We just needed some time to get him off our backs.
Lilith picked up Taylor's head and placed it, neck down, facing the raider boss.
Oh boy.
Joshua was sweating profusely now and wiped his brow on his sleeve. Lilith's eyes seemed to take on a deeper shade of black within black, boring into him. There might have been the slightest hint of a smile on her face, but it didn't reach those eyes. As the tension in the room intensified, Lilith reached down and pulled out a wicked-looking blade, half combat knife, half machete, and put it down next to the severed head.
Jeez, the look on your face right now. I bet you just crapped your pants. Lucky for you, that's exactly what Taylor told us. Well, right after I'd broken both his kneecaps.
Lilith picked up the knife and cut off Taylor's right ear before stuffing it into her mouth. The raider boss could hear the crunching of the cartilage as she chewed, then swallowed.
Of course, he didn't tell us where the Blood Eagle chem lab was, and oh, I tried and tried. Did you know that Day Tripper keeps you from passing out, even if you get your arm cut off? Taylor didn't either, but he does now.
Joshua gulped audibly, watching Lilith cut off bits and pieces of Taylor's head and stuff them in her mouth.
Since you like deals so much, we're going to make one of our own. You're going to tell me where the Blood Eagle Lab is. If you do, we'll just forget any of this ever happened. And Taylor, well, think of it as collateral damage. But if you don't, well, I think you already know how that ends.
Joshua had heard stories about people having their life flash before their eyes. He never really put much stock into it. But damned if he didn't feel like it was happening to him right there and then. He took a deep breath and tried to keep his hands from shaking.
I don't know exactly where it is.
Lilith buried her knife into the top of the table.
The mire. It's in the mire. A cave near Berkeley Springs called Hawk's Refuge. Used to be an old post-war raider camp. As much crap as they cook up in there, shouldn't be that hard to find.
Lilith just stared at him while she sawed off Taylor's other ear, chewing and swallowing it as she considered his information. Then she abruptly stood up, grabbing Taylor's head, startling the raider boss.
I guess that's a good enough place to start.
Lilith walked out from behind the desk, head in hand, and got directly in the boss's face.
We have a deal, but you just used up whatever credit you might have had. But if your info is bad, or I hear you've crossed us again, you're going to wish I just killed you. Do you understand?
Joshua could only nod as the sweat dripped from the end of his nose.
Good. Time flies. I have people to kill.
Lilith stood up again and dropped Taylor's head right into Boss's lap as she walked out of the room and outside. It took several seconds for Joshua to start breathing again. Looking down, he dropped Taylor's head to the floor, and this time, he did fall out of his chair. He didn't know how long he'd been sitting on the floor, staring at not much of anything, until he heard one of his guys at the door.
Hey, boss. You okay? Caravan just came in. Thought you might want to check it out.
Yeah. Just give me a minute.
It took Joshua a minute to collect himself, and a minute longer to figure out what to do with what was left of Taylor. Then he got up, grabbed two bottles of whiskey from the cabinet, and walked, unsteadily, out into the afternoon sun.
So convenient that Damon installed all those listening devices back in the day. I mean, with everyone trying to stab everyone else in the back, it just made sense. But whoa, boy, this is some real juicy info right here. Oh, decisions. What was that, Spike? Oh, yeah. What was the guy's name again? The one with the cams? Day, that's right. That's such a good little liberator. Here, let me get you a treat or something. Ooh, yeah, time to spread just a little more chaos!
Hi, I'm Fire Rider, and I'm the host of The Pixel People, a podcast dedicated to taking a close look at our favorite characters from our favorite video games. From major characters who define the course of a game's storyline, to smaller characters who you might have never noticed. Every week, we go beyond the quest line to examine a particular character's story arc and choices, and discover the real-world parallels and life lessons hidden just below the surface. I hope you'll join us. You can find The Pixel People on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you listen to podcasts.
As day approached sudden proper, he swore under his breath, again. Despite his many attempts, he still hadn't convinced the Overseer to erect proper defenses around the town. She only reluctantly allowed him to repair some of the old post-war fortifications, but she was adamant that her hometown would not be turned into an armed camp. That was all well and good, but the threats to the region weren't something you could just wish away with goodwill or good intentions. At least outside of Sutton, the Overseer was not beyond taking direct action when necessary. Honestly, he'd been surprised when she'd shown him the nuclear warhead she'd recovered from Silo Alpha. How she managed to get it, she wouldn't say, other than she called in a few favors from her Vault 76ers. Of course, his job getting into the Nuka-Cola plant and securing the failsafe had been quite the ordeal, especially with the mobs of ghouls who'd made the area their home roaming about. It had been a good thing that they'd come prepared when Valerian Lilla tried to double-cross them, although his shoulder still ached from time to time from where he'd taken that direct hit from Lilla's baseball bat, although it was still better than getting his brain splattered across the floor. Both he and the Overseer were chastened by the setback. They still got what they needed, and the inoculation was being spread far and wide. But revealing the existence of the nuke had been the most desperate of their last resorts. In the future, the new enclave wouldn't fall for the same trick twice. As they walked into the town, past several merchants heading to the new trading outpost the Overseer had built. They'd converted the old church into a marketplace, full of stalls and now goods from all over the region. The Blue Ridge Caravan was even considering setting up shop, those negotiations were proving more difficult than expected. They also figured that the new enclave had already infiltrated the town. Given the number of folks coming in and out, plus the Overseer's welcoming attitude, he'd been surprised if they hadn't been. Lucky for them, he made sure that all of the planning had been done with the same cadre of Vault 76 residents that had come together almost a year ago, after he'd nursed the Overseer back to health and traveled back to Sutton.
Hey there, Jay. Wanna buy some mute fruit pie?
Georgia, I would love some, but gotta go to see the Overseer. How's about you save me a slice, huh?
Of course. Anything for you, my dear boy.
Jay had to admit, Georgia made one hell of a pie, regardless of what she used to make it. Her blackberry and tarberry cobbler was to die for, when she could get her hands on some. And as much as he would have had to love to have stopped for a few minutes, he was already late. Spending more of his time at Foundation, he'd worked diligently to build a relationship between them and the Overseer. It hadn't been easy since that holotape Cindy had so conveniently provided to them. Fortunately, Ward didn't trust anyone, so he'd been the easiest to work with, even if he seemed to have a never-ending list of critical pieces of equipment he'd need day to recover. The news from the other parts of Appalachia hadn't been good. The Blood Eagles were on the warpath, and thanks to a bit of information he just received, Day knew why. So he packed up his things and headed back to Sutton as quickly as he could. He'd been forced to detour around a new Enclave patrol, as he didn't know if they might be looking for him, or what they might do if they found him. He started climbing the small hill up to the Overseer's house. He could see Tommy in his usual spot. As part of their precautions, there was a rotating schedule of guards, each one camped out on the front porch, trying to act as inconspicuous as possible. He got the standard cursory nod from Tommy, then knocked on the door.
Come on in.
Day was immediately assaulted by the smell of fresh pumpkin pie, his personal favorite, and he wasn't surprised by it either. The Overseer knew he was coming and always seemed to have one ready for him, right out of the oven.
Day, my boy, it's so good to see you. Why don't you take a seat and I'll get you a piece of pie and some Nuka-Cola?
Day just nodded. He learned a long time ago that she never took no for an answer, and in a way, it just made her feel more like the mother that Day never had. He sat at the head of the table while she served him, even including a dollop of whipped cream on top, which was new.
What's the occasion?
A few folks got the old creamery up and running down near Charleston. They sent some samples up and may even get their own stall down at the church.
Day couldn't help himself but dig right in. He couldn't remember the last time he had fresh cream, or fresh anything for that matter. He didn't know how the Overseer did it, but she always seemed to be pulling rabbits out of her hat.
Now, Day, you were supposed to stay at Foundation for at least another week. And what about Cindy?
She's fine, and Foundation is fine. For the moment.
Then what is it? You heard something, didn't you?
Lilith is off her leash.
The Overseer's smile turned into a frown, and she crossed her arms. Taking her seat opposite of Day, she sighed.
Who's she after?
Blood Eagles, so far. I mean, it couldn't happen to a nicer group of folks, I'll tell ya. But it's only a matter of time before innocent people get caught in the crossfire.
And you tried to warn me. I read your notes and you were convinced something was in the works. I guess this just confirms it.
You are always the optimist. It's okay. This is why I'm here.
It wasn't supposed to be this way. We were one big happy family. And now...
The Overseer put her head in her hands and sounded anguished. Day finished his pie and laid a fork down on the empty plate.
Overseer. Ma'am. I have an idea. A plan, actually. I just heard from a little bird on where Lilith is heading next. We don't have to do anything, just spread a little neighborhood gossip in the right ears. Best case, they manage to wipe each other out. And even in the worst case, there's a good chance Lilith gets herself killed anyway.
Day reached over and put his hand on the Overseer's.
Hey, you know it's for the best. You even said it yourself. It's her. Or us. Eventually that's what it would have come down to anyway. And you don't always need to know what I do or how I do it. That's just the way things are.
The Overseer sniffled, wiped her nose, then sat up a little straighter and nodded.
Now, I have some good news for a change.
Day reached into his pack and pulled out a pile of papers and a few holotapes and put them on the table.
I finally managed to convince Ward and Page to take a closer look at our Vault 79 project. Of course, they've asked for a laundry list of things they'll need before they fully commit, but I managed to get a lead on most of it. Even better, I don't think Cindy has any idea. I've been keeping her busy tracking the vaccine shipments. Nice kid, but spycraft is not her game.
I think she'll still come around. But I agree, this is far too important. This may be exactly what we need to counter the Whitespring. Now, walk me through what you need, then we'll decide our next moves.
Thank you again, members, for joining us here on The Modus Files. If you've enjoyed this content, please subscribe, and better yet, please leave a review to help others find our little enclave. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Modus Files, for more information about our podcast, Fallout 76 content, and random musings on the Enclave. I'd also like to thank our cast, Lucy Middleton as Major Lothalstair and Freya, Mark Harsworth as Bitter, Tim Young as Sullivan, Pandora Beatrix as The Blood and Georgia, Maria Cheshire as Rose the Raiderbot, Ryan Negrin as Day, introducing Wendy Novosinski as The Overseer, and Brad Williams as Joshua the Raider Boss. And a shout-out to the Apocalyptic Aristocracy Discord, home to a great group of fellow creators, the Robots Radio podcast community and the rest of the Robots Radio Rocket Club, and Jeremiah Johnson, our favorite character artist who provided the wonderful character artwork you can find on our website. Lastly, thank you to all of our subscribers and supporters. God bless the Enclave, and God bless America.
Members, we look forward to your next visit to our little enclave.